some wings forwarded. How do they do that? Try to pass on the most vague things and then say that it applies to what you're doing. And for example, Amazon patterns with double click, which may not seem like much, but if you're doing any type of internet shopping, in a sense, you're going to have to at least click twice somewhere and put something in a shopping basket and carry to the checkout. And until one click. Which basically, all it does is basically puts it in, I think, with some predefined settings and sends it to the checkout. And that's the pattern. I think Microsoft attempted to pattern something that has been out there for months.
Years.
Like 20 years. And people like, well, why are they doing that? Microsoft actually patented something the day after, about a couple of months after, Apple had a product that incorporated that feature in production and on sale. That was allowed. Things like that. And Microsoft's response to Apple was, give us $15 per unit and we forget it. Now, obviously, if it's something like the iPod, they're not going to do that. So, you know, so that type of thing is important. More recently, we've had code. Basically, we've got code in the kernel and we want $699 for everyone who uses it, every company that uses it. It goes in court. It's been over 3 years later, they haven't shown any coders yet. And well, the case is more or less falling apart, and because everybody's realized that they don't have a case, and others basically said they don't even have the copyright over their claim. But these are the type of things I think. Some people think with more than good reasons that they were given money by some other software company to go and attempt to do certain things, and there are things that pointed, there are things that may point in that direction. I'm not going to speculate. When you look at things like, for example, WTO regulations on intellectual property and the Berne Convention, which says that you've got to put certain things in place in your home country to be able to share the benefits of trade, but it's heavily weighted against developing countries. When you look at things that, for example, where developing countries are told by certain companies that you've got to put your country's data into a format that isn't pretty open, isn't fully documented. And what that means is that, in a sense, someone in your own country can't write something to get that data out. So to some extent, that data doesn't really become yours. And that's pretty scary to me. You've got countries like, for example, St. Lucia. St. Lucia, for many years, has been bananas and sugar. Now they've got a situation where they don't really have bananas again. And given things that have happened in the European Union, where certain other countries, Brazil and a couple other countries, have sued them and said that the European Union didn't have preference for things, they probably not going to have much sugar either. So they have to learn to do something else. And for a small country like that with limited foreign exchange, especially given the price of oil these days, it doesn't make a lot of sense for them to spend a lot of money on proprietary software. You know, so in a sense, they've actually made an official commitment to move this way, open source. And in the long run, it makes sense for them. Venezuela, Hugo Chavez has basically said, they've tried to kill me. They've said they want to kill me. He's also going open source. The Chinese, the Japanese, and the Koreans are going open source, and they're actually getting together to produce a distribution for their side of the world that deals with kanji. They don't agree on anything. What do they know that we don't? You know? You've got states in the USA, Massachusetts, basically looked around and said, we want our format open. If you're going to do work for us, if you're doing any work in our state for our government, the format of the data that you think must be open, must be publicly specified, and must be specified in such a way that any application, once it writes those specs, can import that data, export that data. What do they know that we don't? In Trinidad, we don't know what's going on. We just occasionally hear that, well, the government signed an agreement with X company or Y company. We don't even know if those formats open, those formats are closed, that's something that we're probably going to have to look at very shortly. You know? I mean, we hear about, yes, they're going to computerize things.
Who's we?
We the people, in a sense. We the people, we the citizens. We the taxpayers. I mean, we hear about working. You need register of goods and debts are being computerized. Mm-hmm. But we don't know what the format is. We could probably find out to go and harass
someone.
Yeah.
Tell him this is like,
but that's my point. That data should be public. I should not go and say, well, this man knew it informed that man. Those things should be open. Everybody should know that. I mean, and you will get demoralized that democracy here and really something is supposed to us. You know what I mean? Yes? You know, I mean, that's how we, in a sense, become. But like I said, I'm so used to talking about software freedom, but it's other freedoms. I mean, like.
Let me ask a question. People are going to ask. If it's open, doesn't that mean that it's more likely to be hackable and malware?
That's the weird thing. Bruce Schneider, never forgot the right pronunciation, who is probably one of the greatest security and encryption gurus out there, says that actually the best encryption is one where the public specs have been out there and people have had a kind of look at it and try and hack it, and if it's not hackable, you know it's something good. If something is closed and it's open to public scrutiny, there is no way of telling how good it is. You could have one or two bright people looking at it, but one or two bright people can forget something. And some little kid will come and say, hey, what's this? Okay, I broke it. Cool. Which a lot of times is what happens when you have these little guys who write these browsers, these nasty browser things that go and take over your browser and send your data all over the place and dump your machine and all that. And that's basically what they did with.
So what would you say to Bill Gates on that they have the most secure system because it's the one that's been the most hacked?
Well, this was the same man that was kicking out the Chinese government the other day.
Yes. Yeah.
So, let's not go there.
So, this is the same man that employs another man who puts chair behind employees as a form of public
relations.
Human
resource
management.
That type of management is bad or common, but that's beside the point. Things like that you've got to look at. So basically what we hear, we hoping to, like I said, I also represent First Caribbean. We have more or less put ourselves together. Some of you all may know that we did an international conference in 2003 in Trinidad. It was somewhat well attended, and some of the principals from that, myself included, have decided to take that to the next level. Form an organization. The organization has been formed, and what we're looking to do is, in a sense, carry that message about free software and open source, libre software, out to the wider Caribbean. And so far, I mean, people out there want to hear that message. But they see it as having. Well, maybe I don't have to send so much money out to my country. Even if I have to give that money to somebody else in my country to write this software for me, the money stays. Money doesn't go outside. That money will create employment for somebody inside my country. Things like that. So it's a message that some countries out there are hearing, some countries out there aren't hearing it as much. We hope to get more countries, including our own, to hear that message and say, well, maybe I'm going to take some of that money that I'm spending on outside stuff, employ some guys inside to do certain things, and maybe build something that people can make a comfortable living from, make money from. You know? And
usually the business community tends to put up a bit of a fight because they're comfortable with Microsoft's products and that sort of thing.
They're comfortable because they've already written off the cost. They're already saying, I'm buying this product, and to them, things like, well, there's server down, or there's server rebooting, or, alright, the other one, to back up the firewall because somebody brought in a virus again from outside, that's taken as an acceptable cost of doing business.
So if you were to pitch Linux to a business person, it would be easier, an easier sell to hit somebody who is a startup or just
you a startup small business, somebody not starting up. Yeah, startup small business. Okay. Or somebody, or for somebody who downtime is not a good thing. Some people need to 24/7. We're hosts. I mean, everybody here is on the internet. Everybody knows that web guys need 99.9% of time at minimum. Most of those guys. Why is he most popular server on the internet Apache? Why is he most popular combination LAM? Linux, Apache, MySQL, and PHP. Why are some of the biggest and most popular, most heavily visited sites running content management systems built around that? What do they know that we don't? Google is basically the darling of Wall Street now. Google is basically the big competitor to Microsoft. Why does Google use Linux in most of its internal operations? Amazon saves a lot of money using Linux. They use it to retire some Linux boxes. They run it on their back end. Amazon doesn't look like a company that can afford a lot of downtime.
Any other big names?
Google is the biggest name.
Okay,
okay. How much time does Google take into?
So
IBM.
All the IBM actually
in
there for the
external. Yeah. All the external. I mean, you talk to some of their mini computers, the AI system, the mainframes. All of that stuff is running Linux, and more and more of it is running Linux. They're trying to fill up OS2 again. I mean, it doesn't want to go because it's actually a pretty good system, but what does IBM know that we don't know?
What about, like, the government is a large employer, and people working for them will be exposed more and stuff like that. Who are the decision makers and what type of technology is used?
That's a good question. The story I heard was that somebody around 1993 or 1994 did an audit where they found out that in fact the biggest pirate of software in the country was the government. And unfortunately, when you sign certain agreements, you've got to respect the intellectual, the copyrights and patents of other people, which means that I think they very quietly went and signed some long-term exclusivity agreement with a particular provider that's more or less been renewed year after year. Whenever the time comes for renewal comes up, they renew it. I don't know. Maybe it's a company in the Washington
state.
Because sometimes
you have to be careful.
It's legal liability.
But folks, that's actually a quick lesson on a personal or business level, whatever you're involved in. Clean up your house first before you call the inspectors. Don't call the inspectors when your house is.
And for many years, that was the attitude among very big companies locally. Like, I'll go buy one copy, 500 PCs. Nice. That is good economics. Only to realize that, you know, even if they have a possibility, they might get audited in there. So,
do they do that in China?
Yes, they do.
People actually go around and.
Yes, they do.
Right.
And how much is it?
Wrong people expect
$25,000 US per machine. Multiply that by 500.
How much?
$25,000 US.
Okay.
Per machine. Per piece of software.
Yeah,
they actually.
But we hardly hear about
it. Because we don't hear about it in China, because what they do, they'll go and they'll say, whatever you want, it's usually the BSA, which is just another nice way of saying front organization for Microsoft in these parts.
What's BSA?
BSA, Business Software Alliance, which is basically an alliance of
more
certain.
That's a BS alliance.
basically the essay of a bunch of software providers that have gotten together in an effort to enforce software licensing among themselves, which means that if you're actually pirating something that doesn't belong to the essay, then they don't care. Another interesting fact about it is that every year they put out a report stating, talking about things like the World Wide for Software Piracy and whatnot, and they put out one in this year, in fact, and the Economist basically said the numbers were bogus, and their response was that you should not say that, we don't think the numbers are bogus. And are the numbers bogus? I think some of the numbers are pretty suspect because of some of the things that they go into to say as to what comprises a pirated machine.
So, the way they calculate
it, the calculation
is suspect because, alright, so we have four machines here, right? Say we have four machines here, right? One running Windows, three running Linux.
Right.
According to the DSA, those three are running Linux because they're not running Microsoft products, they're Microsoft and somewhere else. Those three count as
non-licensed part of the software because you
didn't buy those
windows screws. Yeah. Okay, let me give you like this box. This box is for parts. Normally, if you buy OEM, like this. This came with a license. A Windows license. Because it was bought as a unit. This was built for parts.
Theoretically, this is
supposed to be a machine without an OS, which printing itself for the same price as a machine with an OS from Dell. If you ever look at what Dell sells, it sells for the same price. And then you wonder why. You know? Things like that you have to worry about because again, we see these types of agreements becoming more prevalent. We see agreements where they will tell you, okay, for the next 2 years, all the updates of our base software and the service packs and whatever, are going to be free, but you're going to have to pay a particular sum of money up front. And at the end of the 2 years, the person stands and says, but wait, you haven't updated your software. You've only bought out this whole package. Why have I paid you this whole whacking set of money for? And then they'll come and say, yeah, but the next 2 years, you're actually going to update the stuff. And then when you look at it, you realize, well, the update requires you to buy a whole bunch of new machines again, which is like a whole new separate set of licenses.
The great thing is that pay this money now. So if you do stuff, it will be cheaper for you. Because if you don't pay the money now, when you do update,
it's full price.
You will have to pay a new set of money.
Yes, you know?
So you're basically hedging against. Okay. There's no promise that you will get anything for your money.
Okay.
In case we do something, they could get it cheap. So it's easy money up front. Other manufacturers, other retailers do similar schemes.
Okay. Let me go back to that. Okay, so then again, well, with all this, well, why Linux? Why this bunch of kernel utilities, window managers, and all this stuff that people take together, some not put in a distro? Why? Well, one, because...
Yeah, my question was, I understand, you set the scenario about different scenes, this person having data, the proprietary, all of that, right? You explained that you belong to PLUS, right? Free liberal
open software, right.
What I'm asking now is, with PLUS, how regular you all meet? What is PLUS objective?
Okay,
other than just telling us that, well,
our objective is free. Primary objective, promotion of open source software. Secondary objective, creating. In a sense, we are the guys that don't clear the brush to make sure that other people could walk through.
Alright. It's an awareness type organization.
Right now, awareness, we do some training.
Right, it's we were also holding training any type of short seminars, and even ours, we attend our conferences with popular what is it included? Education for people in plus, right? You not necessarily you have to be plus, right? Media is an option.
Right.
If you're interested, you know, you can show your degree, or at least guide you.
Right. That's right. Are we that's one last question. Are we targeting any of those problems that you're calling out? Big problem. Like for example, like how you talk about St. Lucia might be in that kind of concept, are we targeting any of those big scenarios to just identify
we now started.
Right.
We now started.
No, well, I've been there for since 2000 or something.
No, well, this is what we noticed. So with the St. Lucia thing, Andrew actually went to St. Lucia late last year, at the invitation of the St. Lucia government. They actually took the lead and said, well, this is what we want to do because of certain economic realities that we have to face.
Right.
And they actually basically got a collection of people around. There have been initiatives in Jamaica, there are initiatives in Ghana. I think right now in Ghana they're probably running an LTSP installation somewhere in Linden, either in Linden or Georgetown.
Okay.
As part of this whole thing. So I know there are organizations
on the ground
doing the things. Okay, with us now, what we are going to do, like I said, we've now started. So what we're going to do is Plus LLC, plus Renard LLC, and we doing databases professionally. Okay. Plus Prevent will always remain a non-profit.
Right, right.
I mean, because of the role we have to think.
Yeah, but that's business.
That's business.
Doesn't
prevent any
guessing.
No, it doesn't mean that's
not
massive.
It's a conference. Yeah, we have a couple of courses. Yeah, we have a couple of courses. A lot of activities will be, if you have a fee, it's really to cover the course.
Yeah.
Right? And also, they need to cover future courses of events. But we're going to need some funds up front. Right? So
things like that.
Yeah, what are plans for things like entrance into schools? Usually students would tend to use software or be familiar with some software
they use in school. But that's the weird thing, you know. Like with me, for example, I actually, the gamers tend to be pretty receptive, actually. Mm-hmm. I mean, you always get like one or two guys who actually, this is cool. This may not necessarily be as exciting as shooting people in StarCraft. This is something that they could use, and we've actually had like, I know of at least two hardcore gamers who've actually more or less gotten full-time employment running cross-based systems. In Trailer. You know? And they are probably going to be more because, I mean, we got a guy who, he was a hardcore gamer. We kind of introduced him to it. And he's, I think every website he's put up has had, I mean, them guys. Plus CMS, post new thing. Boom. And with that type of practice, I mean, he's actually gotten into some technical skills where he wants to make a career out of it, and most likely he's going to be running a mix of plus or Windows systems. I mean, you're going to see, and I think probably in the next 5 to 10 years you're going to start seeing a lot of this. You're going to start seeing a lot of these system admins coming out with dual certifications. I mean, Nissan isn't here today, but Nissan was a guy who basically went, did all the Microsoft certification, did all his MCSE and the whole gamut, looked at Linux, decided that this sounded like something he wanted to convert to full time, did his research, converted, and wrote about it. Actually, I have the PDFs on a CD somewhere. Actually found the newsboard article and with all the comments, so that's something that hopefully if you get time to look at that. And for him, it made sense because he got a job in Barbados, he had to maintain a system where he wasn't getting any money. He had to do everything through FLOSS, with FLOSS software.
What is FLOSS?
FLOSS, free labor and open source.
You mean there's no
money? No, okay, FLOSS software is basically, FLOSS is an acronym. It means free, libre, and open source. Mm-hmm. It's just a...
Libera.
Libre. L-I-B-R-E.
Libre.
Libre. Not Libera. Libre. Yeah, Libre. Yeah. Spanish. Yeah, kind of Spanish. Yeah. Spanish, I think. Yeah. Why we say Libre is because the Spanish sense of the word is actually more in tune with what the meaning that we try to convey than simply free. Is liberation. It's not really well any software free, of course you could go on, you know,
so the point he was making was in fact that this fellow was maintaining these systems using open source software.
Yeah. That's what
he had to do network management.
Yeah, he had to do everything. Network management thing.
Everything.
Right. Everything. And given that the company he was involved with was doing disaster preparedness and response, the time was unknown.
Yeah, but at some point in time, you must have to pay some money because I went to a Red Hat clinic. Yeah. I went to a Red Hat center.
Right.
And there's something in his value, but he was putting out the point about Red Hat is free, this, that, the core is free. But for everything that comes
everything
to support
Red Hat. Red Hat is a commercial software company. Red Hat, actually what Red Hat did was basically say, here what? What we're going to do is give away our base and don't be put. The base is very wide.
Right, the Fedora.
Fedora project. We're going to call it Fedora because Red Hat is a commercial offering and we've been giving away these free ISOs. And we've had people with the free ISOs coming to look and looking for free commercial support.
Right. But what I'm saying is that you are telling me no. Mm-hmm. What you are telling me is that I could get a total system.
No,
there's that everything. Because they say this guy uses open source.
This is second part of the equation. You have a community, you have a worldwide community of experts that you can draw upon. Once they ask nicely, once they contribute back, once if somebody asks you something and you know the answer, in a sense you pay it forward kind of a thing.
Right.
You know?
So any problem, anything you encounter, you might just say, boy, but I have this problem.
Boy, Richard. Exactly.
I have this problem with so and so. And you might be able to write a code for that and say, oh,
I might be able to say, well, okay, that's something like so and so. This guy might know about it. This guy might know about
it. Or just advising. And he might not have a module ready that you could pull and just log into your thing.
I'll tell you another thing. My friend Chris was actually doing a lot of work with Samba. On Red Hat, incidentally. When he complained, when telling the disabled, I've been getting some trigger. Somebody from HP who actually wrote the code wrote back and said, okay, we got that error, we understood it. It's actually a bug in so we've updated the code. If you go and you pull down the update and you compile it from source, you shouldn't get that problem again because we figured out what was causing it. So said, so done. Mm-hmm. It's a big fan of compiler from source. Most people are not because. Okay. While it will give you the results you need, it's an extra step that certain people, some people will need it, some people won't. Compiling from source is basically just, you take the source code, you run it through a compiler, you make an executable file of some sort out of it, you execute it. You take that executable file, you execute it. Okay, let me give you an example. Ubuntu. Sorry behind this. South African guy called Mark Shuttleworth. What's he known for? Creative Thought.
Yeah.
Basically, Creative Thought, which was one of the certificate authorities, when you go on a website and you get a certificate. Remember, you start Thought, THAWTE, that you could have gone and bought the Thought certificate. He created that. Sold it, I think, to VeriSign for a lot of money. Did a couple of things, including going up in space. And now... No, what happened is that more or less, he's from now, he's based in Africa. Basically what he's done in South Africa is he's decided, well, I am going to create software in a sense of my country and world. So basically what he's done is that he's put a lot of his own money behind this, which does account for a lot of the very nice packaging that we've seen here. And because uniquely among three distros, you can actually, for now, write the company and say, I want 10 of these, and they will mail it to you at their expense. Which is pretty cool. I mean, I paid the shipping and weight, but that's about it. I think I paid $40 total, for like about 20 CDs. You know, which is cool. And what's nice about, like I said, again, the power winner. You've got one bunch of code, but it's not necessarily limited. It's not limited to like x86-64. I mean, I put these in the back here, but okay, now on one side, PowerPC processors. This includes Amiga stuff, Mac PC, and Mac machines. This will actually run on a Mac, pretty much unmodified. We ran it on Mike's PowerBook the other day. For some reason, we can't see Mike's hard drive, but everything else works. So we have figured it out, we just haven't figured it out yet. We don't know if that is just because it has some money or whatever. This is compiled for 64-bit machines. You've got an Athlon 2000, you've got an Operon, you've got an Itanium, if you ever want to be lucky if you don't have an Itanium. This is actually the version you want to specifically compile, specifically for real machines. About, I would say 95 to about 98% of the apps in here are 64-bit applications. What that means? More threads, more memory addressing, more power. I think OpenOffice isn't 64 bits yet, and they're actually doing some work on that. Now, as Microsoft will tell you, getting a functional 64-bit operating system out there isn't an easy task, because they've had XP to 64 bits in beta for a long time. They finally reached final, and I think there's still huge driver problems with it. Not so much. Pretty much as soon as 64-bit machines came out on the retail market, versions of the 64-bit computing popped up. Because in a lot of cases, you've got the code, it's a simple case, recompile, run. Recompile, it executes, run. Takes a while.
That's a
live version,
so
this is just a live version.
I'm keep asking
all the questions. Live version last question, and it's all kind of slowly. But that is still a thing when it comes to it. So that's pretty much it for now. What else we have planned? Anil is actually a very good local, very good software designer. I mean, you wouldn't even say it, but the man has helped.
Is that my
source level? Yeah. After source level. So if you need to go with source level, that's Anil. He is going to talk about a little bit about local software development, using open source. He's going to do some Boroki demonstration, which is the package and the package that he's working on. And Anil will discuss working with Ross in a local environment, because that's what he does as part of his job. I'm just the office user. I use it in the office. When I have PDFs to create, I just go for everything in OpenOffice, create a PDF, and I gotta worry about harassing IT people and acrobatics. And then we'll show the Windows side, which is basically plus on the Windows platform. It's just a sub-level software. It's not limited to Linux, it's not limited to VST, it's not limited to Mac OS X. a lot of this stuff runs and runs very well in Windows. So that will be demonstrating some of that for us latency. And now let's put your first team. I like it.
Thank you for your time.
This was sort of unexpected for me to speak nice way. Basically, what it is you need to do with what Plus. Initially, Plus was a very